Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
Okay, so thank you everybody for joining us today. This is the Better Me in 23 session. This one is going to focus on leading with empathy, how to recognize when help is needed and what to do next. And leading the session today is Mandy Zantara and Jesse Lopez. They did this session last month. That was really awesome. We all loved it. And I am going to hand it over to them.
Yay. Well, thank you. I'm going to say hello, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mandy to kind of get us going here. But I just want to say welcome and thank you guys for joining. Mandy helped put together this amazing slideshow and some kind of PowerPoint here. So yeah. I'm going to let you kick it off, and I will share screens, and you can run. Does that sound okay?
That sounds okay. So as Jesse said, my name is Mandy. For those that joined last month, thank you for coming back. For those that are just joining today, welcome and thank you for joining with us. What we really kind of touched on with the last series, and you can always go back and watch it, is really breaking the taboo and making it safe to talk about mental health, not only on the level of working, but also as leaders. And so this is just really kind of a follow-up from there. Once you make it safe and we've got all of that out and now it's being discussed, how do we recognize it? What do you look for? How do you lead with empathy? Really, what does that look like? And then how do we track that? And so what do we do next? And so hopefully the guides, the PowerPoint that I did is really just a guide. We really want this to be interactive. So if you guys have questions, comments, whatnot, please just chime in. This is really for you. And so the more interactive we get, the better it can be for everybody. So really, we'll just start with, what does empathy mean? And I can read, and so can everyone else, but what does empathy mean to you guys? Do you guys have any thoughts of what you guys think when empathy comes to mind?
Feel free to chime in the chat or unmute and go. I love empathy as a topic while we're waiting for people to chime in here. But this is a big one for me, and I'll share. But let's see if somebody else has it.
Yes.
To share. Understanding. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a very big piece of it.
It just brings me to thinking about my kids, but you kind of always want to know that your kids have empathy too, or showing, empathetic feelings. And for me, it's when I can see that they have emotion based on what someone else is going through. So if we're watching a movie or a show, even my 2-year-old, when somebody's sad, he gets sad. And I feel like that's the start of, feeling something that other people are going through and understanding.
I love it. Yeah. And thanks, Amy, for sharing that. And I see, listening. So I understand the other individual's perspective, looking from someone else's perspective. Yeah. All spot on there. And I think, I'll just chime in here. And, and one thing that I always, because empathy is new for me. And I say it's new for me because something that, probably ever since I was little and even more in my professional career, I've always been coached because I very much lacked empathy. That's not been a strong suit for me. But what I will say is the COVID era, for all of the things that period in our lives did to us, one thing positive that came out of it for me was I learned empathy. And that's really the distinction I want to make as we kind of go forward and talk about this is empathy is a learned skill. It is not an emotion. And that's something that I think is very important that we understand. And I love how you frame that, Amy, of children, right? Watching a movie or seeing something that kind of causes them to react in a certain way, because teaching empathy from a very young age, I think, is incredibly important. And I'm in my 40s and I'm barely learning empathy. And it's always been kind of a struggle for me. It's one of my favorite sayings has always been, here's a straw, suck it up. truly. And great question there, Kelly. Can you tell me what non-empathy looked like for me? It was just that, right? Suck it up. Bad things happen all the time in the world. Crying doesn't solve the problem. I was always very quick to just look at it through my own lens, right? And not being able to truly understand how a certain situation, or probably even more so words, right? Not allowing them to impact me personally and not understanding how those could actually impact another person. And, it's that old saying, right? Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's a load of load of hooey. I mean, that's like the biggest load of, you know, but we were all, that's what we were taught growing up.
Yes, it's exactly what.
And so for me, I've always just been a very calloused individual. And for those of you who were on the call last month and those of you who missed it, of course, here's just a thing. But, you know, for me, my father passed away when I was really young. And that created such a calloused environment in my life for me. Like I just became very cold, right? And I just was like, suck it up, like just get over it, right? But learning to truly actually just sit down for a minute and honestly kind of just shut up and listen, right? And actually also not just listen, but I think if you have that ability to see the person, like, you know, Mandy and I here face to face, to see those facial reactions, to see those things, we have a kind of a saying around here is fix your face. And so what that means is when somebody's speaking, you know, if Mandy's saying something to me and I'm like, you know, making facial expressions and kind of being dismissive through that facial expression and nonverbal communication, I think that ties all around with empathy, right? Because if Mandy's sharing something that is very personal to her or something that might be impacting her, and I'm just very flippant about it, well, I'm not showing empathy. I'm not trying to understand and see how things might impact you. So, you know, hopefully that answers the question and helps kind of give some of that context to it. But wait, did you find yourself thinking that the story was the individual putting themselves in a victim situation? Yeah, probably to an extent. Not always, though. But yes, there are those times when I would be like, hey, you're just being a victim. Stop the woe is me. You know, like, get over it. Truly, as I guess that was my mentality. Like I said earlier, like, here's a straw. Suck it up. Like, you know, just get over it and move forward. And I didn't have that realization or understanding that not everybody could think that way. And then I relate it back to the COVID era because that's really when there was such a global impact there. And as I was interacting and still going out to restaurants and to, you know, doing the things that I was doing and seeing people and seeing how it was having such an impact on them, I very quickly, I feel anyway, gained that skill of empathy and started really trying to see things through a different lens. To have that understanding. So
yeah,
I don't know. Hopefully that's helpful and that little insight there, but I'd love to hear your take on it also.
No. And that's exactly, for me, empathy has always been a very natural thing for me. I actually am somewhat of the opposite to where I have to kind of watch myself because I can have empathy burnout and I can take on
too much
and really feel too much and actually take on their feelings as if they're my own and trying to solve it from that perspective. So there's also that balance on the other end, but it is very much a learned skill. And it took me a long time to understand on the other side that it's not a natural skill for everybody because it always was for me. And so it's always finding that natural thing and also really understanding too the difference between sympathy and empathy and really understanding the difference and working through that piece of it, that sympathy is really understanding from your own perspective. And I think that can very easily get construed into having empathy, but empathy is really being able to walk in another person's shoes, so to speak, and understand how they may feel and how it may impact them, which means you do have to listen and you do have to really understand those things. And so I love everyone's comments here, and we can go to the next slide. I think we have some more pieces here. Yeah. And so really, as we go into the leadership piece of this, I think empathy, you have to kind of draw on some other skills as you learn the empathy, because there comes emotional intelligence, which you kind of talked on, which is reading people's facial expressions and their body language and those kind of things go into there. But it's really so important, I think, as leaders today, in order to really be able to help our employees when they come to us and our other coworkers and whatnot and be that example, is you do have to have this empathy skill or at least knowledge to be able to work through and understand it, because it is at the highlight right now. I was reading, actually preparing for this in Forbes, that this is really one of the top on the list these days that they're saying leaders must get right. We are in the age, especially coming out of COVID, where people have really had the isolation and maybe have started talking more about mental health. We're making it safer. And as we're making it safer, then leaders need to get more prepared to deal with this and not have the, hey, suck it up, buttercup, we got to just move on kind of mentality that I think was very common up until now, even in leadership.
It's a hard, I think, especially in leadership, right? Yes. And that's obviously the focus here is, you know, how do we deal with this as leaders and you know, guiding our employees and our personal lives. But, you know, I think it's so hard in that leadership role because where's that line? Mm-hmm. Where's that balance of, you know, I am a responsible steward of this company And it's incumbent upon me to make those decisions and be that, you know, CEO or COO or whatever your title may be, right? But also realize that, you know what, you can also be a human being. Mm-hmm. And understanding that empathy, but there is a line there too, because you can very easily fall into, you know, that you know, kind of stop being a victim, like you're the martyr type of scenario, because some people do draw on that, and they and some employees play into that, right?
They
employees
do.
The people,
no, right? They do as humans,
and being able to recognize those things, and as a leader, be able to ascertain, is this that, you know, person really just the woe is me? Am I being a martyr? Am I really, is there a bigger play here, right? You know, because I don't like the person that I'm sitting next to, and all of those things that we might deal with frontline employees. Or is this really at the root of it? Is there a mental health issue here? Is there something bigger and deeper going on with this employee? And, you know, just a quick example, but, and not one of our employees by any means, but I was on Facebook here a couple of weeks ago, and you saw me scrolling on my phone when we started, I apologize. I was looking for the screenshot because I wanted to read it verbatim, and I apologize, I couldn't find it. But somebody that I'm connected with on Facebook, we've never actually met in person, although we're from the same small town and we do all the same things. We're passing and we do a lot of the same fishing, all those things. So I feel like I know them a little bit, if you will. But this particular individual put a post out there that basically, to the extent, said, you know, curse your depression. Why can I never escape your grips? Was something to the effect that he said. And so basically I saw that as a kind of a call to help. I saw that as somebody reaching out for help. I immediately commented, sent a private message, and was like, hey man, we all have struggles, blah, blah, blah. How can I help? My point in that little story though is, to me, that's a sign. To me, that's an early warning sign. And that's kind of where I was going with this, of recognizing the difference and having that empathy to realize this is an early warning sign of something bigger versus this is somebody taking kind of that victim, woe is me, martyr mentality, right? And distinguishing between the two so that you can address the situation. And I think on the front side of that, recognizing that if this is an early warning sign, is this a warning sign of something that will pass in time because it's short term and it's just a strong feeling right now? Or is this something and a sign of more long-term, where truly now we need to start talking about professional health? And is this beyond the scope of me as, you know, the manager or the leader in this company?
Right.
Is that kind of it?
No, it is. Exactly. And that's, I think, really what the purpose of this is because those lines are starting to get blurred. I think in leadership, it was always very clear, you know, the relationship you have with the employees that are reporting to you are professional and you don't become friends. But when you start getting into the line of mental health, you kind of blur those lines a little bit because you maybe ask questions and get to know them in ways that maybe you wouldn't have been before. And I think this new empathy coming into leadership is blurring those lines a little bit. But at the same time, as leaders, we have to know when that balances. We have to know when to give enough time to listen, when that person truly is playing the victim or really does need help, and then how do we manage it long-term, which of course will be next episode is long-term managing. We really just wanted to focus on what empathy is here and really how to help you guys recognize and why it is so important.
Well, I think another variable or challenge that you throw into this, right, and I'm kind of just using myself here as a use case, right, but you know, the level of relationship that you have with your team, your employees, and the people that you're responsible for within the walls of the company, you know, and family is a whole separate thing, right? But as we speak here, you know, from a professional perspective and in the walls of our companies, you know, again, I'll just use myself, but, you know, I have incredibly strong relationships with all the ladies on my team. I mean, Mandy's, you know, not this Mandy, but one of the other Mandy's, you know, she's worked with me for 13 years. You know, the two of the other ladies have been with me for seven, you know? And so when you build those types of relationships, you see the kids grow up, you see all of those things. Yes. Does it make it easier? I feel to potentially recognize those more long-term things and, hey, we really need to get you some help. And I see this dramatic change in you, but where the variable or the challenge comes in is now creating that separation of professional, personal relationship, and potential mental health problem, right? So now you've got three pillars that you're trying to manage and not go too deep because I have such a strong relationship. At least that's a challenge for me as a leader.
No, it is.
Right. And I don't know if anybody can relate to that. You know, and if you have that type of tenure on your teams, it can be a challenge. It can be a very big challenge. And sometimes, honestly, I've had to separate myself away and say, hey, you might be better off. Why don't we have you talk to this person? Because I'm already personally and emotionally involved. I've seen the situation outside of the four walls of the company. Does that kind of make sense?
It does.
So I think looking at all of those things and being able to distinguish between personal relationship while still having empathy, while still towing the line and being a steward of your organization. And at the end of the day, first and foremost, at least for me, priority, being a good human, right? And trying to truly help solve the problems or push this person in the direction that can help solve their problems. If that makes sense.
No,
think,
it does.
I think being the good human, in my opinion, is first and foremost.
But oh, absolutely. And I would agree with all of that. And I think those are some of just the few many hats that leaders wear in navigating all of this. And so this just goes into why leadership and empathy is just so important. And we can go to the next. I just kind of put in some things to kind of look for as far as empathy goes. And this is where really having those relationships will really help with your team is watch out for signs of burnout. You know when what your team looks like on a normal basis. You know when they start trying to do things that may be a little bit different. You know, this is also ways to practice becoming more of an empathetic leader is, you know, show sincere interest, try to seek help, show compassion, learn new issues. All of these things are ways that you can practice to become a more empathetic leader.
Yeah. I think just knowing your team too, right? And everybody, obviously, you know, companies are different size and it's not feasible in much larger companies for people to have, I think, as deeper relationships as like we might.
Yeah.
We're a fairly small company. And so, you know, sometimes we are in that vacuum, I feel, of how we manage our relationships and things because we're so engaged on a daily basis. But I think that's also a big piece of it because, you know, and I don't know, and I'm just throwing out things that, you know, we do here, the one-on-ones, you know, we really push all of our team leads and managers to have those kind of weekly touch bases. And sometimes it shouldn't even be about what's happening in the business. It's more about what's happening in life. Are the kids good? Is the family good? Because, you know, we take the, for lack of a better, more selfish approach in terms of, you know, the company needs to have good employees. We're here to be profitable. We're here to do a job at the end of the day and earn our paycheck, right? You're not going to have good employees if they're not happy and healthy in their soul and in their mind.
Nope.
Right? Meaning if they're not happy and healthy mentally and physically and all of those things, they're typically not going to be a great employee. You know what I mean? And so, you know, taking that interest in ensuring that people are still sound and happy because, man, especially in today's environment, there's so many stressors.
Right?
There's so many outside forces pulling everybody in.
Everybody's going through stuff and struggling, and you just never truly know.
Well, and even right now, like this time of year, I can't speak. I mean, I can only speak to myself, obviously, but like this time of year, always, you know, one, our industry gets stressful because nobody's wanting to close loans, right? And it's because of school. I mean, I'm not saying school is the bad thing, right? But right now, all the kids are going back to school. The parents are focused on that. It's a high stress level, especially if you have multiple children or depending on what age there is, that middle school transition from eighth grade to now having a freshman in high school, that elementary to now middle school, those are all very big transitional years for children. And I'm not sure if people realize the stress and the things that actually does to parents. I mean, those of you that are parents, I can see hopefully some of my heads nodding, right? It's a time that's going to impact performance at work. It is. There's no question.
No.
But I'm just sharing that again is now do we look at that as, is this a moment that will pass or are the signs we're seeing something that's more long-term?
Right.
And I've even seen to your point of the burnout, right? Or where you're taking on too much. I'll use my wife, you know, as a perfect example. My wife is very similar to you, Mandy, in terms of, man, she just draws in on everything and she's very likable and it's crazy how people just automatically open up. Mm-hmm. But man, she pulls in all of that stress and that energy and then carries it all as a burden.
Like it's her own.
Yeah, like it's her own, right? And it does create issues in our relationship at times. There's challenges there. And so all of those things can play in. But again, back to that point of when you have these conversations or you see that performance starts to degrade or you see things that are signs, is it short-term and something that will pass?
Right.
Or is it signs of long-term detriment?
And that's where I think those one-on-ones, I mean, even if you are a larger company and you can't do them maybe on a weekly basis, even if you make time for them every other week or at a minimum once a month, to me, those are just critical to even just what's going well in your life. And what's going on and how can I support and not always just work related because you've got to be as in tune to those as you are to the work piece in order to really stay on top of it or you can get surprised.
And some people hide it well.
They
do. I mean, some people hide it. Like you have no idea what's happening in the darkness, right? And they just hide it so well. And I'm saying that because I'm trying to reinforce that importance of true connection. And I will just say that's one thing and kudos to you, Mandy, because I think you know, the connection interviews and things that we've started doing are just phenomenal. And I think there's tremendous value in that. And it's different than a performance review. I can't stand performance reviews. No. Truly, I just think they're not great. But
no.
You know, that connection type of interview that you've mm-hmm. developed for us is I love it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So
anyway. I'm appreciative of that. So we can go to the next slide here. So again, I just continued ways to improve your empathy. If you want to continue to work on that as you're outside, there's some really great feedback in here as far as really just getting feedback, talking to people, exploring your heart, not just with what you're thinking, really trying to walk in other people's shoes. There's just so many different things. And the biggest thing that I took away when I was going through this is really just humbling yourself. Learning something new is a great way to really learn that kind of skill when you realize, hey, you get in the comfort of routine and you get into familiar patterns, which actually goes back, if anybody reads the book about the lizard brain, does touch on that as well. And it's just, you get lost and you can actually block yourself from learning new things in your routines if you don't question them. Yeah. And so this is just another great point to that.
And I love, let's talk about the three brains, right? And I don't know if anybody's read that book or if you've had these things, right? But, you know, we all have three brains, right? Mm-hmm. The lizard brain, the bird brain, and the human brain, right? And your lizard brain is that fight or flight, right? That immediate reaction. The bird brain then comes in as that emotions, the anger, the tears, the sadness, right? And then, of course, the human brain is logical and methodical thought. Mm-hmm. The goal in situations should be to go from lizard brain to human brain as fast as possible. Right. And recognizing and controlling our own emotions as human beings to say, right, I'm not going to react to this. I'm not going to do the fight or flight. I'm not going to just have that immediate knee jerk, nor am I allowed my emotions to shine through and take that burden of crying or being sad. Let me think about this first. That's kind of a pause, if you will. Mm-hmm. Right. And just, hey, let me take a deep breath, count to three, slow yourself, slow your thinking, calm yourself, and then get to that methodical thought and then react to the situation mm-hmm. accordingly. So just kind of to touch on that, I think that's a really big thing. It's something that I learned, you know, a few years ago, and it's helped me tremendously, especially when we start talking about empathy. Because as I mentioned, like I'm not sure I could actually verbally communicate the lack of empathy that I've had, right? If you were to talk to Rob Clement, you know, our company president, it's something he's coached me on for years. It's just been continuous. But it's truly trying to take that step back. And I think I was able to gain the side of empathy, you know, faster because I really focused on just being a good listener. That's another weakness that I have. I've always struggled with active listening because, not because I don't care, not interested. If you haven't noticed, I have a little bit of energy. And so my brain is moving a million miles an hour. And so it's hard for me to stay focused. And so I've had to do things to keep myself focused. Mm-hmm. And in focusing on becoming a better active listener, I was actually able to improve my empathy skills and gain that side of it because I was actually taking more time to truly listen to what you have to say
right.
with intent, mm-hmm. right? To truly understand what's happening there and peek behind the curtain.
It is. And is, and listening in and of itself is a skill that you learn. And it's something that I used to think I was really good at. And now I'm re-challenging myself to, am I truly doing it as well as I would like to do and being very mindful to listen, to understand and not respond and not defend and not have an answer. Right. And for me, not to fix.
Yeah.
I want to instantly fix and make everyone happy. And when I can't instantly make everyone happy and they don't leave my office and just gleam in smiles,
yeah.
it bothers me. And so there's a lot to that as yeah. well.
I just want to check in. Is this a helpful conversation? I mean, and please guys chime in, chat. Feel free to unmute, right? And throw stuff at us if you guys questions, whatever. Definitely okay, love wonderful. To engage. So yeah, good. I'm glad you guys are getting some value here.
Okay.
Are you ready for the next slide?
I am.
I keep waiting for you to say like, next slide, please.
Next
like
slide,
super
please.
Official.
Okay. And so we're going to get into just some basic mental health. And this is really not because we're professionals or really for the point of teaching you guys about mental health. I think the biggest thing in being aware of what to look for is to just have a basic understanding of what is out there, what could potentially be aware, and just to know at what point we may need to really seek help and what does this look like, because they do hide it so well.
Yeah.
And so really the point of this, and I only really went over the top most common, is to really focus on what it may look like in the workplace, how to recognize it, and then how to move forward from there. So next slide, please.
Yeah, let's actually, if you don't mind, I'd love to dissect this one a little bit, right? Because
okay.
there's some good stuff here. And I think, you know, when you start talking about the anxiety and the depression and, mm-hmm. and bipolar, you know, I think, you know, while these are necessary descriptions, I see a lot of them as labels. And I mm-hmm. think that's part of the negative side of this, right? Is we tend to create these categories or create these labels that then in my eyes lead to judgment. And that's a big piece of this, right? Is there can be no judgment when you're in these conversations or you start to talk about these situations, because again, we have no idea what the other person has gone through that's put them in this place and time.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, as we go through these, kind of what I wanted to unpack there is, you know, again, I know they're there and they're clinical and all of those things, but that word disorder to me really bothers me. Right. Because I think we have as a society created the disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I watched this amazing speech the other day from a Vietnam veteran, and he was just talking about his journey. Right. And he brought this home in terms of the disorder. We all have post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
There, we have all been through something in our lives at one point or another that has caused some type of traumatic stress, little or small or big, right? We've all been through it. To put the disorder behind it means that, to me, it just seems negative, right? And we've labeled somebody now to say, like, you have this disorder and you may never get out of that. And I don't know if this is even making sense. It's just something that has been in my brain here the last week or two as we've kind of been prepping for this. But it's just something that I would like to address, and hopefully we can get away from those, because I have anxiety, and I can assure you, I don't have a disorder. I would not ever say that I have. At least maybe that's my own way of dealing with
Actually,
it. Right?
But I am so glad you brought this up, and I didn't even really know how to put this in here, but it is part of the reason why it is so very well hidden by some is because of the fear of judgment.
Yes.
And that is the number one reason why people don't talk about it.
They don't want to be labeled.
They don't want to be labeled. The stigma, the stereotypes. For me, and I struggle with anxiety, and I've been diagnosed many things on this list that I now say I don't have. You misdiagnosed me, and I'm taking my power back, because I don't want to be labeled with a mental illness. And having that label to me is the same with the judgment piece of it, is I don't want to be that label. And so to me, we do all may have this, and it may be a permanent thing that someone may have forever. And some of it may be short-term and situational based on their environment, or maybe how they grew up and learned. And so I love the idea of, and bringing that aware of, really making it safe enough where there's no judgment,
right?
And we're leaving those stigmas out of there. And there was a question in here too about how do you approach,
Oh yeah. When I see someone struggling with something, I'm always unsure how to approach, and I don't want to overreach, but want to let them know I'm there.
Yeah.
And I think you said it perfectly, to be honest with you. I mean, that's at least me, and I would love to hear you also.
No.
But yeah, that's just it is, yeah, hey, I don't ever, and it's okay to say that in my mm-hmm. eyes, like, hey, I don't want to overstep. I just want you to know at the end of the day, I can see there's something happening there, and just know that I'm here. I'm a safe space. I'm here to listen. I've even gone as far as say, look, there's no judgment. Like, we're all screwed up at the end of the day. So, you know, you're not abnormal. You know, whatever, however you want to frame that. But I think it's okay to call out and say, like, hey, I'm not judging, man. I'm just here to listen. Mm-hmm. Nothing else.
And that's exactly how I do. I'm sorry, somebody was going to chime in.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Amy. Is that you?
It's me. It's Angie. I was just going to say that this year has been especially hard for my 13-year-old, and she has anxiety. And she had that big stigma, I don't want to have to take medicine for it. And I said, well, you also have brown hair. It's just who you are. It doesn't make you any less of a person. It's just something you're going through right now.
Yeah, no, exactly. And having that understanding and take away that stereotype really does make it easier to deal with. And I think that's the biggest, hopefully, outcome that comes from this, is really truly making it safe and removing these labels.
Yeah. And I mean, it'd be great if everybody really, like exactly what you just said, like we're, like everybody is messed up in some way, shape, or form, right? There's no like perfect person that has no trauma, no anxiety, no depression. You know what I mean? And I feel like, you know, we model ourselves against something that probably doesn't even exist, because like you said, Jesse, we've all had something traumatic happen to us, or we, you know, anxiety. Although, so the other thing I was going to say is that sometimes I feel like it might be helpful to people, for me, like some postpartum stuff, like I realized it way too late. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. I wasn't just a horrible mom for having these feelings of like stress and I can't handle it or whatever. Like once it was labeled, it actually did make me feel better, because I was just beating myself up saying, you know, I thought I was going to be a better mom than this. And it was all these just negative you know, self-talk. It wasn't true. I was still a great mom, but you know, the fact that there was a name to it kind of did make me feel a little bit better. So I don't know. And on one hand, I wish it would all go away and everybody would just be like, we are who we are. And I have anxiety and, you know,
I just
put out my medication either. So
no. I think the label of the actual word disorder, right? Yeah. That's what we were doing.
Yeah.
For me, it was the illness piece, not necessarily. So I do agree that I think having a name to it and understanding it brings clarity. But I think we also need to be careful not
the negative connotation. Yeah.
Feel like there's a negative aspect to it and that it's a forever kind of thing. It may be, it may not be. Everybody's going to look different. And I think being open to that and that understanding and all of this is just very beneficial and actually essential as we go through this.
Yeah. I was waiting for you to say next slide.
Okay.
I beat you to it.
Next slide. And so really the first one I touched on is anxiety, because it really is the most common. Everyone has experienced anxiety at some point in their life, whether it be day-to-day worry in life, whether it just be a stressful situation and maybe it's just a few weeks. Clinical anxiety is if you feel fearful and have worry for more than 6 months, but that looks different for everybody. You know, there's a lot of different symptoms that come with anxiety. There's a lot of different types of anxiety disorders. It's a broad term for a lot. They can be mild, moderate, severe, or even panic level type anxiety. You know, you can have panic attacks, unless there's some anxiety disorders that are not noticeable at all. And some people are so good at hiding them or so functional. And there's even high level functioning anxiety.
Yeah.
But you would just never know. So,
and anxiety is a tough one, right? Because I think with anxiety, there's so many different levels as you're talking about here, right? There's that you can still be. I mean, I shared this before, right? Like I get anxiety. It's a different type of anxiety. It's not a, you know, I think at the end, if we were to define anxiety, it's really the fear of what's to come, right? We create this anxiety because we're afraid of what the outcome might be, for the most part.
For the most part.
And so, you know, like my anxiety that I suffer from is not that fear of what's to come. It's just that feeling of being anxious. Like, what am I going to do now? I get so much pent up energy, right? I feel like I have millions of little explosions going off throughout my entire body. And it can be, I'm not going to say crippling, but I have to really stop and breathe myself through it, because it's like, I've got little millions of bugs crawling all over my bones. It's horrible. Right. But I've learned over the years to just kind of breathe through it. Not everybody can do that, though.
No.
And especially when you're talking about that true anxiety and that fear of what's to come in those high stress situations, truly, as it says here on the slide, is it can be debilitating, and people can freeze in it. But I think it's understanding fear, right? Because that's really what it's being driven from, in my eyes, at least from my opinion, is, you know, you're getting that feeling of anxious because, again, you're fearful of what is to come or the unexpected or the unknown.
Right.
And so I think if you can learn to take on and grow that skill of mastering your fear, right? That old saying, courage is not the absence of fear, it's the control and the mastery of fear. Far easier said than done, for sure.
Yes.
But if you're looking for things, I just encourage you to push yourselves into uncomfortable situations. The more you can push yourself outside of the comfort zone, I feel the more skills and the better apt you are to deal with anxiety, but you can also help coach other people through those anxiety attacks, right? Because once that panic starts to set in, you know, it could be a big deal.
It can be. And panic can make several, I know for me, when I get there, it's almost paralyzing.
Yeah.
It truly is just paralyzing. You almost have to turn the volume down to see.
Yeah, for sure.
I can see that. So definitely. So next slide. And so then this is just the several different types of anxiety. Again, just kind of listing them down here. You know, you have your generalized, your panic disorder, obsessive compulsive, your post-traumatic stress is also in here with anxiety, as well as being its own type of mental health. You know, there's just so many different things. There's phobias, there's, you know, substance abuse can even induce anxiety. Medication can induce anxiety. Even if it's, you know, legal medications, even from your doctor and whatnot, some side effects can produce anxiety. Yeah. So there's just so many different types of anxiety out there that it's just so wide well, that it's just important to kind of know some of the general signs of what you'll see.
And I think the separation anxiety, before we move from the slide though, that's a big one, right? Because you know, obviously I can't, I'm not going to speak for you women on the call and that are listening, but you know, that's just one that I observe a lot, you know, and I'm, it's that perfect time of year. You got all these kids going back to school. I can remember watching my wife through all of the kids, all three of them, right? That first day of school, it was harder for her than the kid by all means, right? Mm-hmm. That fear of letting go. And then she was worried throughout the entire day. I see it with other members of the team, you know, and so that's a big one that I would just encourage everybody, right? It's kind of seasonal. Mm-hmm. You might have somebody that really, especially if they're a first-time mother, right? And that led the first time you're letting the fledgling out of the nest. And so, you know, I'm not trying to put myself in your shoes by any means, women. I just see it, right? And it's one that is very visible. And it can have such a traumatic impact, right?
And that even spills over into some of the family dynamics that I've seen when, you know, wives, and not only just as mothers, but we're worried about the home. And so oftentimes, even though we're at work, it's what's going on at home and making sure we have everything done at home. And are we going to get home for dinner? And
all
that separation stuff of still trying to deal with all of it and worry.
Okay.
So this is where we get into not always noticeable. Again, there's several that don't come up and even talk about anxiety, because again, it's general worry. A lot of people were raised with different perceptions on what it should look like. But really, there are several people are embarrassed or ashamed that they have these feelings or these symptoms, or you know, they may use other excuse to avoid these kind of inducing situations. You know, they may try to really understand themselves well enough that they're able to call off or disappear for things just at the right time before these things happen, so that way they go unnoticeable. So it's just really important, again, to have those connections with your staff and your employees, and to kind of be aware so that way when things do seem off, you can approach it. And, you know, I don't think I touched on the question before after Jesse did, but in HR, sometimes I get several people that will come to me, or managers that say, hey, I have this employee, I need you to check on them and get them resources. Oftentimes, I've never even met these employees. I may have met them in briefly, and hey, welcome, here's your new hire onboarding stuff, here's your benefits, let me know how I can help you. And now I'm going to call them and talk to them about something very personal.
Right.
And I've not even talked to them two words outside of welcome to the team.
Yeah.
And so how do you do that? Yeah, it can be really uncomfortable.
That's tough.
And so really what I do is I just call them and say, hey, it's been brought to my attention that, you know, this is just strictly from a place of concern. There is no judgment here. It's a completely safe place. We are here to help you. And if we are wrong, you know, just know that this is from a place of concern and no place else, but you seem off, and that's what's coming to me. And it looks like you may need some resources and you want to talk about it. I'm here. And kind of just going it from there. But I think
that's how, sorry, I didn't mean,
no,
it's just, that, like, how's that received? I just curious. That's a tough conversation.
It is. Usually it's received very well. 9 out of 10 are appreciative. They may not open up and talk to me. Sure. Most of them don't.
Sure.
They'll take the resources and then call the EAP line or do what they need to do. A few of them may open up and talk, but really for the most part, they just say, thank you for the concern. You know, I appreciate working for a place that cares. You know, you may get the one that is so sometimes just so still afraid of that judgment that they're like, how dare anybody think anything's wrong? Why do they think anything was wrong? And they get upset.
Do you see that as a sign of something deeper? Do you take that
do you take that as,
hey, there's probably an underlying issue?
There is. And we really need to get them more help because I see that as a defense or covering up, especially when I hear their voice.
Right.
And you just kind of try to pick up on it, and you trust your sense and your gut after a while.
The lizard brain comes in immediately on their side, right?
Yeah.
Defense.
And their first thing they usually say is, what did I do for them to think that? What did they notice? What did I not hide? And that's what I pick up on it. And for me, I pick up on that because truthfully, that's what I would say. If I was approached, I would think that I'd be thankful, but that would be the first thing I thought of is, what did I let slip?
Holy buckets. Yeah. What happened?
What happened? You know, I was trying to hide it. And at the same time, you're thankful, but I can see where they come from in that situation too.
And so I just kind of go with it. Deeper.
Exactly. And it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're really, you know, one thing I found in this career is that if you approach anything with care, if you approach it from a true place of concern and a true being nice human element, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to go wrong.
I think the key that you said there, though, in that is truly approaching it from that place of genuine care.
Yes.
I think if you're in that robotic mode, if you will, and we all get there, we've all been there a time or two in our professional careers, I would imagine. But it's truly taking that step back to be a human being,
right?
And understand. I get that. That's great though. And that's got to be a tough situation. And I'm just kind of unpacking this a little bit because, you know, I'm trying to imagine in my mind if somebody came to me and said that, and then it was my responsibility then to reach out to that. Uh-huh. That's a tough. Kudos to you. Thank you for doing that, right? Because that's anybody else that's on this call that might be in those situations on the HR side of things. That's a tough phone call to make.
It is. It is not always an easy phone call to make, but it's necessary.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you do the best that you can and you work through it respectfully. And I think that's the best as leaders as we can do for any of our employees.
Yeah. And I like Sarah's comment. I don't want to step over that real quick because we were talking about that anxiety and that fear, right? COVID made it even worse, right? Leaving the house for not so long. And then now all of a sudden you got to send your kids out to daycare and the world of germs, so to speak, and all of the craziness that's mm-hmm. happening out there. And not only that, like I see these videos of the child abuse and the things that are happening in some of these daycares and at schools. And it just blows me away.
It is.
It's such a scary world, but
it is.
Anyway,
sorry. And coming, I was in HR actually at a Head Start for the last 9 years. So
yeah.
I completely understand where parents are today and whatnot. I don't know. How are we doing on time wise, Amy? I think
it's 3:40. We could go another 5 minutes.
Okay. Okay. So that being said, I will definitely get these sent out. I just kind of wanted to touch on a few things to kind of lead up to our next episode, since we're coming up with 5 minutes. So what I did in these slides is really, you know, how to recognize anxiety. And it's really not just anxiety. It's any kind of mental health, I think, kind of has some of the same underlining symptoms that you can look for, as far as, you know, if they're trouble concentrating all of a sudden, if they're procrastinating all of a sudden, if they have great attendance and all of a sudden now they're not showing up, they're calling in more, they're getting sick more, stomach issues more often, headaches more often, migraines have just started. You notice that maybe they're shaking or holding their hands differently. Those kind of things can all be signs that there's something else going on.
Yeah. Physical appearance, I think, is one. And again, you know, obviously not passing the judgment, but I think physical appearances can be a good indicator or sign, right? Mm-hmm. And if you start to see dramatic changes, you know, in the way they're doing their hair, or maybe they're not anymore, or clothes aren't ironed, and you know, now there's more wrinkles where there wasn't before. Like all of those little things can be so subtle, mm-hmm. but they can be such big indicators that there is a greater underlying issue. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if I could, as we wrap here, I'm going to put you on the spot, maybe not.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
If you had one nugget to throw out to the folks of, you know, what do you do when you recognize these signs? And you kind of already approached it when you have another manager, but what happens when you see this? How do you approach that when you start to see some of these signs building up with an individual?
I just bring them in and the same thing, to say, hey, I want you to know, first of all, I want to talk to you. This is coming from a place of concern. It is not necessarily work-related, and I want to make it safe. So I give them my opening that there's no judgment here. It's a safe place. I'm, again, coming to you from concern. But over the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've noticed, hey, you're not doing your hair anymore. You know, you used to fix it every single day. It was straightened, and now it's literally thrown up in a messy bun, and that's just not like you. Is everything okay? Is there something I'm missing? And if I'm out of place, just tell me and we'll move on. But I want you to know I care.
I love it. Yeah, that's great. And again, it goes back to, right, if you're unpacking that a little bit, it's truly just being a good human in that place of genuine mm-hmm. care.
It really is.
And I can definitely see that, especially in your role, you know. So thank you for sharing that. That's good stuff.
Not a problem. So in these resources, and we'll get them sent to you, it just, again, goes over the basic of depression, what it may look like, some resources. I also put in here some links to the National Mental Health Institute. They have some great resources and booklets and workshops that you can give to employees. There's some phone numbers for some different things if they want to seek help. If you need state specific help, they can help guide you. And I also put in here the National Suicide Hotline as well, because it's a big one that you can just always have and say, hey, you know. And even if you think that, you know, even if you think it's someone else and you don't know how to approach it, you know, reach out to your EAP, reach out to your professionals. You know, I've had to be on several wellness calls at some point where you're just worried about someone and you say, hey, I've observed these, I'm reporting it, I think a wellness check needs to be made. And then you let the professionals handle it. And then you've done your piece and they'll get their clinical people involved in whatever they need to in that time. So
And I would just encourage you guys to rely on the group, right? We've got a lot of good folks on this call. Mandy and I have both made ourselves available previously, and I will continue to do that. Even if you just need an ear to bounce off of, you know, hey, what would you do? Or, you know, how would we do this? Cause I assure you, I do that across the board. I have peers, and there are many times that I need to have those conversations of like, this is what I'm thinking. Just might be harsh. Do I need to show more empathy, or did I, you know, where am I going with this?
So. And seriously, you guys, our information is on here and my email, and I've given it out before, but I'm very passionate, just as Jesse is, about mental health, not only for others, but for myself as well. It's been a journey. And so my biggest way of healing is to give back. And so if you have an employee or even yourself, anybody, I don't care who it is, and you just want to have a sounding board to talk to and say, hey, does this sound right? What if I approach it this way? Because sometimes talking it out is the biggest help.
Absolutely.
Please give me a call. I'll be more than happy to be that ear for you.
And I would encourage, if you don't up to this point, or you're in those situations, I would encourage you to always use a soundboard when it comes to those fairly serious, or if you truly recognize that somebody is showing these signs that it's a bigger mm-hmm. deal, I would always encourage you to, you know, obviously as PC as you can, at least bounce the conversation off of somebody else so that you know.
Yeah. So you have the support too, because as much as we don't want them to be alone, you're not alone in leadership either.
Right.
Okay.
Good stuff. I know we went over. Sorry. Yes, again, my superpower is under my mouth.
That's okay. I mean, we could go on forever. Yeah. Thank you guys so much. I mean, talk about being good humans. That's just, you don't get any better than the two of you. So really appreciate you. I'm sitting here trying to think of something else. I mean, we should just get rid of mental illness or disorder and call it something else. I mean, you know, we all get fragmented and things, life happens to us. And sometimes we're born with, you know, some of it's genetic, right? But like, why can't we just say that this is my mental power, that's your mental power, that, you know, something that is
life. Like,
not
it.
So, like, it is what it is. I have anxiety. I'm not going to go out, you know, like, it doesn't make me a bad person. Or I have bipolar, you know, like, there are some dangerous, you know, types of that kind of stuff too, as long as you're medicated, it's good. But I don't know. Let's think of a new word for it. If we just got rid of that and stopped calling it an illness, I mean, we want it to be recognized as an illness, right? For like insurance and that kind of stuff, obviously. But anyway, I digress. Awesome session, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I will send out a copy of this presentation deck along with any other deliverables or links that Mandy and Jesse want to include, as well as their emails and phone numbers if you guys want to reach out to them. So thank you guys for that. And then I will also give the link for next month's follow-up on this with Mandy and Jesse. So this Monday session. Thank you guys. I hope everyone else enjoyed it as much as I did.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Have a great month and see you next time.
Bye.
And kids back to school. Woo!
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.